Atheist Nomads, episode 264, Don't Indulge Your Privilege.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to our episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're going to talk about indulgences and privileges. Well, privilege today, so hence the odd title.
He thinks he's being clever.
I try.
Pat him on the back, people. He needs this.
Yeah. Yeah, so how are you?
I'm tired, but I'm good.
Very nice, very nice.
We're getting a Boise Corgi Fest underway this weekend, and it has been a crazy roller coaster, especially trying to figure out permits.
Mm.
Yeah, that's not been fun, but hopefully t-shirt sales will make up for the hit that I took for that.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, definitely.
So many Corgis are going to be there, though. So many.
Yeah.
It's going to be so loud.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Isn't that right, Bucky?
All right. So, and we went to visit my family this past weekend, and I actually got to go rafting, and it was beautiful and wonderful. Lots of birds, lots of animals. We didn't have a babysitter and thought the air was going to be shitty. Lauren stayed home with the baby. The air ended up being perfectly clear.
It was probably better on the river than it was at the house.
It was better on the river than anywhere in the western U.S.
So yeah, I basically did what your mom did. Uh-huh. And slept.
Yeah,
all afternoon.
It was
she's recovering from chest surgery. I'm recovering from having a baby. Mm-hmm. 8 months later. Still recovering.
Yeah, that's a year and a half recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so yeah, we slept. It was great.
Yeah, and I got to I saw some burned areas, saw some trees that were still smoldering. And then right there towards the end, after we got through the biggest rapid, we go through this little rapid and there is a rock that I steered the boat away from. I don't think anybody else on the boat noticed, but the current was pulling really hard into that rock. We got by it just fine. And once we got through the rapid, we came across two rafts. One of them, they were doing chest compressions. That boat had not missed the rock, had hit it, flipped. The guy hit his head and died.
Yeah.
That was shitty.
Yeah, that upset pretty much everybody in your boat there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Certainly shocked us when you came home and told us.
Yeah, it was shocking to see. And like, there wasn't anything we could do, so we just got out of their way. Once they tied the boat up to the other boat that had stopped to try to help, that one had a guide with a frame on the raft. So he uses oars and he towed that boat as fast as he could. He also had a radio, so he was able to call for help.
Mm.
And by the time we got down to the boat ramp, the sheriff was there, the fire department was there, and they were doing chest compressions on the main boat ramp. So fortunately, there's a secondary boat ramp there, so we were able to get off the river. But while we were loading up, the ambulance arrived and the paramedic called it. Saw the white sheet come out.
Yeah.
It was shocking. Definitely sucks for his son, who chose to save his own son rather than his father.
I can't even imagine that guy's going to have some seriously tough nights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is just...
It's a nightmare situation for anybody, especially when you are on the river doing the exact same thing as somebody you just saw pass away. That had to have been scary. And I'm really glad I wasn't there because I probably would have broken down and cried.
well, we all know that 3 to 5 people die on the river every year, on that stretch of the river. And we just never seen it. This time we saw one of those 3 to 5 people. You know, and it's easy. It was easy for me to tell myself that, you know, if you look at the stats with the hundreds of thousands of people that go down that river every year, you're more likely to die in a car accident on the way to the river. And I wouldn't be surprised if more people die shuttling around the river. It's a really narrow road on a canyon. So yeah, that really wouldn't surprise me. That doesn't really help change the fact that, you know, we saw a dead guy.
Yeah. Is this going to change your family tradition at all, do you think? Or
I hope not.
Hmm.
We'll see. Yeah.
Well, Kylie was very excited to see you when you got home, so that must have felt nice. Come home to your kid. And...
Oh, it did, because after seeing that, the only thing I want to do is get back to my baby.
Yeah. Yeah. She missed you, so that was... yeah, that was pretty sad.
The website now has SSL encryption, so if you...
Sizzle!
It's now https://atheistnomads.com. So if you visit it in Chrome, it will show up as secure as opposed to not secure. And I have fixed most of the links to use HTTPS. The exception are the short links for the episodes prior to 250. I won't be bothering changing those. So if you go to atheistnomads.com/100, it will take you to the HTTP version of the website. And I'm not going to bother changing that because that is a lot of tedious work.
Hooray! Tedium.
But yeah, so it's encrypted now. It's a good best practices for the internet.
Good job.
And for dusting off the degree, we're going to talk about indulgences.
I like to indulge in chocolate and sugar and naps.
How about buying your way into heaven?
I do not indulge in such things.
Yeah. So the original concept behind it really kind of starts with the Crusades. When bishops and the Pope, well, the Pope initially and then other bishops would make offers of, if you take up the Crusade, you can get someone out of hell and into purgatory, or out of purgatory and into hell.
Wait, what? You can actually send somebody to hell?
No, get them out of hell.
No, you said go from hell to purgatory, or from purgatory to hell.
Okay, purgatory to heaven.
Okay, that makes more sense. Yes. The only people I know that are in purgatory are like babies, and you have to be one vicious SOB to send a baby to hell.
No, babies at that time were in limbo.
Oh, okay, that's different.
Limbo land is the permanent place of neither good nor bad, because you weren't saved, so you still have the original sin, but you haven't committed any sins of your own.
Kylie just farted on me, which I consider to be a sin. Sorry, baby, you're screwed.
So with that concept, you could, you know, given your circumstances, you might be promised that for a particular battle you take part in, that against the Saracens, that you would be able to knock off 10 million years off of your time in purgatory.
Is it just your time, or is it somebody else's? Can you do this for somebody else?
You can if you went on crusade on behalf of somebody else.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So like in the movie Kingdom of Heaven, Balian goes on crusade for his wife, not to get himself into heaven, but to get her out of hell.
Okay.
Because she was a suicide.
Okay.
Then by the time the crusades were done, people stopped making you have to take the cross in battle to buy your way out of purgatory.
And just literally buy your way out of purgatory?
Yep.
Skip the middleman of war and just pay off your sinful debt.
Yeah, yeah. So this was very much a part of the Inquisition. Many of the same people going around, you know, the same churchmen traveling around the countryside, finding witches to burn, also had books of indulgences they could sell, and they would, if you bought an indulgence, depending on how much money you gave them, would depend on how much time you would be buying out of purgatory, and you could they would give you some paper to that effect and record it down in their book.
So how long was an average person's time in purgatory?
All depended on how much money the guy wanted to get out of you.
Okay, but typical church belief isn't that you're in purgatory for eternity, because you are obviously able to take time off of it. So
at that point they were looking at millions of years.
Okay. All right.
It all depends on how many sins you committed. If you live a good long life, you've committed lots of sins. If you go to war, you commit lots of sins. If you were alive in that time period, you committed lots of sins, just trying to survive. And so, yeah, you try to work your way out. And in kind of those initial early periods of it, it wasn't the millions of years. It was tens of years or hundreds of years, and it was small amounts. And there was usually some kind of penance you had to do on top of the financial contribution.
Hail Marys?
Yeah, a few Hail Marys.
I always thought that was a stupid... Oh, well. Maybe for another time, we'll discuss that.
And then it moves on to millions of years and ridiculous sums of money, and you don't actually do anything except for give the priest money, and you get time written off.
And that's not related to tithe, right?
Nope.
Okay.
This is not part of tithe. This is not part of offerings. This is purely trying to directly buy grace from God. This was actually one of the things that helped prompt the Protestant Reformation.
Right, which makes total sense.
Uh-huh. What Martin Luther saw was the church as corrupt as possible, where they were literally selling salvation, and Luther, based on his reading of the Bible, was convinced that salvation came by grace alone, through faith, that there wasn't anything you could do to earn salvation. He rejected the concept of purgatory as well, that you're either saved or you're not. And the Catholic Church was really not happy with that because they made a lot of money off of indulgences.
Yeah. Yeah. Like fortunes.
Mm-hmm. And the practice basically ended with part of the Counter-Reformation.
Oh, so before that, were good deeds rewarded? Like, would you be more likely to go into heaven if you were a good person? And then they kind of like kiboshed that and said, no, it's through grace alone.
Well, so the Catholic model, at least at that point, was every bad thing you did earned you suffering in purgatory. And unless you committed a mortal sin, in which case, straight to hell.
Agey double hockey sticks.
And if you did anything good, depending on the perspective, it either have to be really, really good, in which case it might get you a few days out of purgatory, or it wasn't good enough.
So what prevents Christians from just going around and raping and murdering people?
The same thing that prevents atheists. Most people don't want to rape and murder.
Most.
There are a few people who do.
Yeah.
And they end up in prison.
I just thought, well, that totally invalidated that argument then, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Now, Catholics do have the whole thing that if you murder people, you have to burn that off in purgatory. And if you murder people and you don't confess it to a priest, then you're going to hell.
Okay. All's well if you confess it, huh?
Uh-huh.
God.
Yeah.
This is so screwed.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's all messed up.
We know that, but...
And then with the Protestant mindset is all that matters is whether or not you accept Christ's grace. They would argue that grace results in sanctification, where if you had any desires to pillage and plunder, that those desires would go away.
Oh, yeah. That's not how that works.
It's not. Yeah, it's just not. And like one of the things I find kind of interesting is that, you know, like you look at when the Vikings were Christianized, they stopped pillaging and plundering. I don't think it was specifically because of Christianity.
That's a socioeconomic thing.
I think it was because they were brought into the European economic system, and also one Christian king doesn't just go to war and invade another Christian king. They got brought into the club.
Ah, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with news. Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by listeners just like you. You can find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads. Shelley Fitzgerald married her then partner of 18 years in 2014 and has worked as a counselor for Roncalli High School in Indianapolis for 15 years. Someone learned of her marriage, got a copy of the marriage license, which is a public record, and then sent it to the school administrators, who ran it up the chain of command, and she's been placed on administrative leave pending her resignation or the end of her contract, since she has refused the option of dissolving the marriage.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No. Wow.
Now, at issue here are three facts. One, Roncalli High School is a Catholic school. Her being married to another woman is in violation of Catholic doctrine, and her contract with the school requires that she lives up to the standards of the church. Fact number two, the school receives vouchers, which means it's publicly funded. And publicly funded institutions aren't supposed to discriminate.
Right.
And three, Indiana's religious freedom law was amended to specify that it does not allow for discrimination. So it is explicitly in Indiana state law that you have religious freedom, but you don't have the right to discriminate people because of your religion.
Okay, so this leaves us with a woman who legally has the right to stay married, but honestly should probably move on.
She really doesn't want to.
Well, they're really going to make her life a living hell unless she does.
Yeah, yeah. So she's on administrative leave. She's also gotten a lawyer and filed a lawsuit against the school for discriminating against her.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that I don't know. I mean, having that noose hanging over your head for so long. And she was married for...
She's been married to her wife for 4 years, and they'd been together for 18 years before that.
Yeah. So the whole time she's been working at the school, she mm-hmm. was with another woman.
Mm-hmm.
Knew that that was going to come up sooner or later and managed to put it off that long. That was, you know, I don't know. In this situation, it's kind of hard because she knows that she was technically, quote unquote, breaking the rules. But at the same time, she's totally legally protected and should have no obligation to leave.
Right, right. It's like, so the Catholic Church considers schools to be ministries of the Catholic Church. They also consider hospitals to be ministries of the Catholic Church. Hospitals also receive a lot of government money, and hospitals all fall under anti-discrimination laws.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the church might call it a ministry. Everybody else calls it a hospital.
Right. A little different with schools, though.
It is. I don't think it should be.
I mean, if you think of a Catholic school, you don't think of it as just a school. It's a Catholic school. There are nuns beating you with rulers and stuff.
Now, to you and I, we look at a Catholic school as that. To wealthy members of society, they just view it as often the best school in town and pay through the nose for it despite not being Catholic. Just like we talked about 2 weeks ago for Kentucky, Florida is also requiring that all schools display "In God We Trust" in a conspicuous place. So St. Lucie Public Schools gave all schools a poster to put in their front offices. Palm Beach County School District emailed principals two signs and asked them to print one and to put it up. And Okeechobee County Schools were each given a state seal, which includes the required text, and they've been directed to put it in a prominent spot in each campus. Interesting.
I like that last one.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way of...
That's kind of like a big old fuck you to that law, isn't it?
Uh-huh. That's like, what's a way that we could
literally
do this?
Literally the bare minimum. And since most schools already have the seal somewhere prominently displayed.
Yeah. Yeah. And depending on the exact implementation of it in each district, conceivably, if they're flying the Florida state flag somewhere on campus, it might qualify.
Yeah. There
because
you go.
Because the Florida flag has the words "In God We Trust" on it.
Yeah, that's what a waste of legislative time.
And this one isn't even an example of Republican theocrats being bad. This one was proposed by a Democrat.
Ugh.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I mean, politicians are politicians, so, you know, not that any Democrat is above the above scrutiny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If they do bad things, we call them out for it, too.
Oh, yeah.
And when it comes to something like displaying "In God We Trust" in schools, it's always bad.
Yeah, that's just unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation has sent Secretary of Defense, U.S. Air Force leadership, and the command at Edwards Air Force Base a 22-page letter detailing the issues they have found with Brigadier General E. John Teichert after receiving 41 complaints and conducting an investigation into the ministry he runs.
Oh my gosh. That is a lot of problems.
41 complaints from officers, airmen, and civilians under his command.
He shouldn't be in command of anybody. That's ridiculous. Now, is this a ministry he has outside of...
Yes. Yes. So of concern particular with this is his evangelical dominionist agenda that he makes very clear on his ministry's website, and that he pushes in a way that is allegedly unbecoming of an officer and creates serious establishment clause issues in the way he treats atheists, agnostic, and Muslim, Hindu, and Mormons under his command.
Basically everybody else.
Yes. So he says stuff on his website. It's identifiable as to who he is. He talks about his rank and position and command in the military. He does not have any disclaimer stating that what he is saying and doing is not representative of the United States military or the Air Force or anything like that. Nowhere does he say those are just his private views. And it is current precedent under the Supreme Court as well as military law that officers have less freedom than everyone else.
Yeah.
Their constitutional rights are restricted by the position as officers of the United States. On duty or off duty, on base or off, they are always an officer and have to act as one. This guy isn't.
No, no, he's not. Ugh. Let me guess, he's on paid administrative leave.
No, no, he is still actively running his wing.
Yeah, even worse.
He's running the testing wing that every single experimental aircraft goes through.
Oh.
His previous job was running, was command of the wing that oversees Air Force One. Yeah.
So he's up there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So what's crazy is he just got this promotion, and promotion to any general, you know, any flag level position requires congressional approval.
Hmm.
Congress approved this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure these issues weren't well known at the time, but Republicans in Congress aren't likely to care.
No. Nope. If they have to sit down and read 22 pages, though, they probably will get irked.
Oh, man. Yeah. This is... it's enough that Mikey Weinstein, the head of FFRF, based on the Newsweek article about this, it makes it kind of sound like Weinstein's hoping this guy gets court-martialed.
Wow.
Yeah. At the very least, he wants him forced into retirement.
Yeah. That's what I would figure. They're very good at that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it almost seems like none of this is necessarily that much of a concern, but the fact that he's presenting a very specific message that is specific to how he, you know, the role he plays, the job he has...
Right, he's using his rank as...
And then his actions in his day job reflect it.
Yeah, that's
so this
not
is
good.
Very much bad enough to get a 22-page letter.
Yeah. Ugh. I have a hard time writing one-page letters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, I don't write letters.
On August 5, the government of Canada called for the release of blogger Raif Bawadi and his sister Samar via a tweet. Because apparently, in 2018, all government business in the world is done on Twitter.
God damn. Diplomacy does not belong on Twitter. But okay, whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so anyway, called for that and also, you know, for obvious human rights concerns.
Yeah, and this guy was an atheist blogger.
Uh-huh.
And this was his sister who was defending him.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
So she got arrested this year.
For protests.
Yep. And Rafe is... He's already gotten, I think, 100 lashes out of the 1,000 lash command punishment. His sentence is either 10 years or life.
Oh.
Probably life at this point. They keep raising it.
Yeah.
Keep upping the punishment. And his wife and children are in Canada and got Canadian citizenship this year.
Oh.
So Saudi Arabia asked Canada to stay out of their internal affairs. Well, this isn't just their internal affairs, since his family are now Canadians.
Yeah, they're Canadian citizens, and Canada uh-huh. has the right to defend their citizens.
Or the spouse of one of their citizens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, in response to all of this, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia declared the Canadian ambassador persona non grata.
Which is really fun to say.
Uh-huh. Which means, get the fuck out of our country.
Yeah.
They expelled the ambassador. They recalled their own ambassador to Canada. They ordered all 16,000 Saudi students in Canada to find new countries to study in.
That is insane overkill.
They have transferred all Saudi patients who are getting treatment in Canada to other countries. Like, we're talking patients in hospitals getting cancer treatment.
Right.
They put them on planes and flew them out of Canada. They canceled
all... They're doubling down is what they're doing.
Oh, they've canceled all flights between Saudi Arabia and Canada. And they have suspended all new investment activity in Canada.
That's okay. They have already got... They've got a best buddy in the U.S., right? So...
Oh, yeah.
That's probably where most of these people went.
Probably. Not to Pocatello, because Saudi Arabia won't allow Saudis in Pocatello anymore.
Right. Good old Pocatello.
Yeah, yeah. Home of Idaho State University and had a very large number of Saudi students trashing every apartment in town.
Yeah, they're not welcome back.
And yeah, that didn't turn out well for anybody involved. Saudis are kind of the bullies of the Middle East.
Besides Israel? Oh, wait, can I get arrested for saying that now?
Israel is outside of the club.
Oh, yeah.
So out of the members of the club, like in Jordan, the Jordanians hate it when Saudis show up because they tend to have a high degree of entitlement and lots of money. And they throw around that money to get whatever they want.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not necessarily I guess it is kind of a country thing.
Mm-hmm.
Saudis just have the most of it.
They break shit and
pay you to,
and then pay for it
and then leave.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate for all those apartment renters in Pocatello.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, they are continuing to sell oil to Canada.
There's a shock. You're only willing to take this war so far. Although I still think that is tremendous overkill for a tweet.
Yeah. They responded to a tweet asking for...
They basically did everything short of declare war on Canada.
Basically, yeah.
Because, you know, blame Canada. Blame Canada.
Well, okay, now, they've actually gone a little further. They've gone on the offense now.
Mm.
So, they've been publicly decrying Canada's horrific human rights record, especially their treatment of women.
Oh, that's so cute. Oh, because they allow women to drive now? they've been waving that flag for long enough that it's worn off.
There's the Canadian... suicide rate, divorce rate.
Isn't like half of Canada's like top members women?
Uh-huh.
I mean, and people of color, and yeah, sexy prime minister. He's not perfect, but he's got a nice ass.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. On their one of their official Twitter accounts, because again, diplomacy takes place on Twitter, they retweeted a picture that someone made of an airliner about to fly into the CN Tower.
Jesus Christ.
That has since been removed.
Yeah, no fucking kidding.
Threatening a September 11 style attack on Toronto. Yeah, great move, Saudi Arabia.
That's what drives me crazy is that we can stop. You know, we say all this stuff about Saudis and Saudi Arabians and stuff like that, and there are people who are just cringing and shaking their heads, saying, "I cannot believe these people represent me." It's like, oh, I feel so bad for the normies.
Yeah, yeah.
And not like government officials of Saudi Arabia, because, oh my gosh.
But when you've got 1,000 princes and a bunch of rich people.
Who are apparently all douchebags.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And of course, Saudi Arabia had to up things even more with their strongest show of moral superiority yet.
Oh.
They crucified a man in Mecca.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. And wow.
Now, normally crucifixion is reserved for only the most heinous of crimes.
Yeah.
Homosexuality and attending protests of the government.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But in this case, they went ahead and crucified him despite being merely guilty of murder, theft, and attempted rape.
That does seem a bit light for a crucifixion.
It does. But if the bar of entry is peaceful protest...
Yeah.
Or being gay.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, well, nobody's saying that they're, you know, not fucked up.
I mean...
Who crucifies somebody in Mecca? I mean, come on.
Now, okay, the standard way Saudis crucify people is to behead them and then put up the headless corpse on a cross. But still.
Still. It's common decency.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, peaceful protests and being gay should not trump murder.
No.
Trump.
And despite all of this, the United States has been silent.
Yeah, which is even worse. That's the worst part, is that, I mean, at least Canada has, like, the guts to actually say something, and the U.S. is just letting them. Oh, God, it's so messed up. Of course, the U.S. isn't really well known for its human rights right now.
Yeah. And Trump did hate Saudi Arabia until he visited the country, and they gave him a glowing orb and did a sword dance for him.
What's a glowing orb? How did they make it glow? LED? I bet it was LED.
I don't care. Don't know or care why it was glowing, but they gave him a glowing orb, and now he's best friends of the Saudis. And appears to be, you know, not taking a side in something like this. Sounds kind of like taking Saudi Arabia's side over Canada.
Oh, yeah, totally. Silence is...
Uh-huh. Yeah. Danish police were called to a shopping mall over a fight between two women. One of the women was wearing a veil, the other was not. And the one who was wearing a veil, well, her veil fell off during the fight. Kind of makes me think the fight might have been over the fact she was wearing a veil.
Yeah.
The police fined both women for public disorder and also fined the one wearing the face veil for wearing the veil. And the fine for the veil was 1,000 kroner, or about $155 US.
Whoa.
And that's on top of the fine for getting in a fight.
Wow. That sucks. See, I'm just one of those people where, the whole veil thing, I understand that there are situations where security requires somebody to be unmasked, but asking a woman to strip in any way and is just makes me uncomfortable. I can't imagine how it makes them feel. And so these laws already rub me in the wrong way, but this is just ridiculous.
Well, especially since it seems obvious that, okay, they don't say in the article why the fight took place, but it kind of sounds like the one woman ripped the veil off of the face of the other woman.
Yeah, she probably did. She was going to get fined for wearing the veil anyway, right? So, yeah, that's what happens when you pass these laws.
Right. It encourages
violence.
It encourages violent
assholery.
Yeah. Violent bigotry. Breaking with precedent, a high court judge in London ruled that Sharia marriages do fall under England's 1973 Matrimonial Causes Act. He then ruled that the marriage was void because it was entered into in disregard of certain requirements as to the formation of marriage. It is therefore void, and the wife is entitled to a decree of nullity.
The British always have a way of making things fancy, don't they?
Well, okay, legalese tends to be slightly archaic.
A little.
British language has a tendency to be archaic.
Even more so.
And if you combine archaic, well, you combine the two and you've got archaic language squared.
And you've got people still wearing powdered wigs.
Right. Talking about nullity.
Nullity.
And it is estimated that at least 2/3 of Muslim women in the UK have had a religious marriage only.
Yeah.
Without completing the civil marriage. This is then used by their husbands to keep them in the Sharia courts and out of the civil courts, which in this case was attempted.
Yeah.
And so the judge had to first rule on the husband's motion to dismiss the case on the grounds that there was no civil marriage for the judge to rule on, in which case he said, no, this isn't even a valid marriage at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it sucks because these men who are doing these marriages know what they're doing. They know they're skirting the law. They can't be held responsible for doing horrible things to their wives.
Yeah.
So I don't know why these women, I mean, I get that a lot of them are forced into this, and the ones that willingly go into it don't fully understand the rights that they're losing, but it's kind of ridiculous that in.
And I think it's probably safe to say that they don't have a valid choice in the matter.
I don't think so. Otherwise, you know, divorce rates would be huge.
You know, and this is a known problem. Then apparently actually even getting worse, because Some estimates are that for women under 40, 80% don't have a civil marriage, that it's Sharia only.
Wow.
And so this is bad enough that when Theresa May was still the Home Secretary, she tasked the Sharia Council to look into the issue, and they did, and they unanimously decided that all Muslim couples should have their religious marriage under Sharia law and also get their civil marriage in full compliance with English law.
If they're going to, yeah.
With the full rights and responsibilities that come with that.
Yeah.
And instead, they don't get those, and women lose.
Of course, all these years, every time somebody, you know, around here was like, Sharia law, I scoffed and was like, yeah, right. That doesn't happen here in the U.S. as much, but apparently it's a huge problem in the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
Europe, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is just one example of why Sharia law or even, you know, fundamentalist Christian law alone is not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's some Christians who have responded to same-sex marriage by not getting legal marriages.
Okay.
Which means you don't get any of the rights or responsibilities, and one of the biggest things you lose out on is the right to a divorce court.
Yeah.
And if, like, in the case of the Sharia courts in England, the reason why men don't want divorces going through the civil divorce court is in the Sharia court, the man gets everything.
Yeah.
No matter what, gets every last penny and dime, full custody of the children.
Which is why women don't
house,
get divorced.
Everything. Yeah. And in a civil divorce, you can expect a much more equitable solution.
And that's a nice way of saying it.
Okay. In civil divorces, men have a tendency to come out on the worse end of the divorce.
Yeah.
Now, granted, when you actually do look at the stats, men tend to come out on the worst end of the divorce. 5 years later, tend to be doing a lot better than their ex-wives.
Oh.
Despite tending to lose in the initial divorce.
Mm.
Because, as an example of male privilege, no matter what, men always win.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we have some feedback, and then we're going to talk about privilege.
We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us @atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice.
Brian, via email, wrote in an email titled August 9th episode. No matter how I express this, some people are going to think I'm an asshole, so here goes. The baby in the background is really annoying. That's it. Otherwise, I love what you're doing.
You are a brave, brave man, Brian. And I totally get it.
Uh-huh.
There was too much baby that last episode. I apologize. We apologize.
I edited out as much as I could, and while I was editing, I realized we had made a terrible mistake.
It was just one of those things that we thought we'd give it a shot, and it just...
Right, because it wasn't just our baby.
Right, it was...
Kylie and Blythe were together, and...
And the two separate, I think we could handle, but uh-huh. When they started going off of each other and started getting louder and, like, baby talking to each other...
Yeah.
That's... Yeah.
You know, it worked
nope,
when...
No, it didn't work.
It worked when they're, like, 4 and 5 months old.
It worked before. Why didn't it work this time?
But at 7 and 8 months old,
sorry guys,
no, that
dumb
didn't.
New parent move won't happen again. Well, probably will, but
it's you know, this is one of those things where yeah, we're new parents. We're figuring out how to podcast as parents.
Yeah, most parents drop podcasting altogether. So this has been there's not a lot of precedence here.
Well, especially for both of us to continue doing it. The only other example I know of is with that would be Sawbones.
Yeah.
And there's baby noises in Sawbones.
Yeah. And there's baby noises on our show, too. Mm-hmm. But that last one was
right because
ridiculous.
Normally,
they
it's
were
just Kylie.
So cute. And they were so ridiculous. Oh, my God.
We took so many breaks.
Oh my God, so many breaks. You guys have no idea.
Yeah.
You cannot conceive how many breaks we had to take and how much Dustin had to edit out.
Oh, and how many times I had to repeat thoughts.
Oh my God. They were so cute.
Sometimes trying to repeat the same thought 15 minutes later. Oh man. Yeah, it was, that was not easy. Yeah, we learned our lesson. Kylie is normally fine. When she's not, we can stop like we did tonight. We stopped and we took, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah, half hour.
Until we put her to bed.
Let her play a little bit just to get that extra energy out because she was starting to get noisy.
And also often Lauren just puts a boob in her face and then she's fine.
Yep. I mean, don't we all? But didn't work this time.
So anyway, yes, we are... I am very cognizant of the baby noises. I try to keep them to a minimum. I try to edit out as much as I can. Some are always going to slip through, just like Rocco's barking. I can usually get most of it, but I'm not ever going to get all of it.
I still think that this guy deserves some kind of an award. I mean, it's really hard to go up against parents and telling them that their kid is too loud. And to do it on this kind of on a podcast, it's like, oh, dude, get ready for the pain. But no, we totally understand. Uh-huh. And thank you for pointing it out. It will not happen again.
Now, I am unsure of how this is going to work when Kylie is a toddler. But I know we'll figure that out when that day comes.
We're winging it. If you have suggestions, please let us know.
Yeah, and Frozen is not an option.
Neither is crate training. I've already looked into that.
Okay, well, that I think we've talked that to death. So, privilege is a topic that I know I've heard and seen mentioned a lot. And the first quite a few times I heard it talked about, I had a hard time getting it.
It's definitely one of those things that you get it or you don't.
And I think I finally have wrapped my mind around it because, well, like most straight white men, it takes finally seeing how it negatively impacts you to fully understand it.
Mm, yeah.
I try to do better than that, but sometimes I have a hard time with it. I've been getting a little bit better with spotting some of the things, like when we were talking about benevolent sexism last week. Being able to ride in an elevator and not be scared of the other person in the elevator, or being able to walk down the street with somebody following me or walking behind me and assume it's somebody just walking behind me, not following me, just generally not being afraid in barely or hardly any situation is a privilege. Not being discriminated against is a privilege.
Not to say that when you are discriminated against, it is somehow lesser. It's still bad when it happens, but it happens on such a smaller scale that that's why it may seem like people who are traditionally more discriminated against, so people of color, people of different...
people who aren't straight white men.
Straight white men can sometimes seem cruel in their disregard for what does happen to straight white men. Because once you've seen a huge pile of shit, somebody's little complaint seems trivial.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trivial. It still hurts just as bad. Being a straight white man who is still in poverty still sucks because you're still in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it sucks worse when you're a black woman in poverty. It's
right. A black woman in poverty has almost zero chance of getting out of it.
Yeah, well, a man does.
A white man does have a good chance of getting out of it.
It's just until you see that, it's really hard to accept it as a reality. And so some people think that any kind of affirmative action is a negative because, well, I'm not getting a handout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's because out of the scale of 1 to 10, you're a 1, and this person's a 10, and they need the handout more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard concept to wrap around, and it's really hard to face your own privilege.
Yeah.
To look in the mirror and say, wow, I've actually done really well for myself, and this is why. So I was born where I was born.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's kind of interesting is one of the things that helped me better wrap my head around it is some of the social pressure on new parents and how much of it is incredibly privileged bullshit.
Yeah.
You look at any advertising targeting new parents. You look at the shelves in the baby section of any grocery store. The amount of marketing around organic or natural is high pressure moral judgment.
Right, because if you can't afford to have these fragrance-free, bleach-free, all-natural cotton wipes, then you're somehow a trashy parent.
Uh-huh.
And that's just not true.
And it's kind of interesting to look at it in terms of both the language that gets used, it being all, you know, you need what's best for your child, you need the safest options, the purest, the most natural, the most whatever buzzword they're wanting to use. Often we'll try to claim it's the most nutritious. Now, for starters,
choline.
Factually, most of that isn't true. Quite possibly, factually, none of that is even true.
Right. It's marketing.
It's all marketing.
But it's marketing to guilt, and that mm-hmm. can really affect your social standing, your self-esteem. It's just a douchebaggery thing to hold against somebody.
Yeah.
So what if my kid doesn't get organic apples? Or
an apple is an apple.
You know, yeah. Or, you know, new clothes every week. A new pacifier every single time one drops on the ground. I mean, it's just...
uh-huh.
Yeah, so, yeah, I get that.
And one of the things I've kind of picked up on is that the people who have bought into, like, organic and all natural, bought into it completely, their language is seems to be permanently changed. You don't have tomatoes, you have organic tomatoes. You don't have sunscreen, you have natural sunscreen.
Or bleach-free sunscreen, or...
Yeah. And these adjectives that get added onto everything brings with it inherent moral superiority and judgment. When
he just got back from a vacation with his family, can you tell? I mean, they mean well, but yeah, we can't afford.
But we've also seen some of this with everything with your family as well.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, every family has this.
Uh huh. And it's one of those things where, you know, when you start to break it down, there's, okay, for one, if you even buy the marketing, would determine whether or not, if you can afford it, you're going to spend the extra money. But there's the fact that, like, for a great example, I looked at two displays of tomatoes this weekend. Tomatoes on the vine. They looked identical. One was 99 cents a pound. The other was organic. $4.99 a pound.
Yeah. And you're thinking, okay, what, it's a couple of tomatoes. That's, you're still paying under a couple bucks for
right.
that. But it's everything.
If you're spending 2 to 5 times as much on food, the ability to do that implies that you are a very privileged person. And judging somebody for not doing that, whether it is overt or implied judgment, is pretty shitty.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, it goes a lot deeper than just that. It's that the market pressures it creates adds choices for the privileged while removing choices for everybody else. Stores have limited amounts of shelf space. So when more shelving is allocated for organic or all natural products, that means you have less shelf space allocated to more affordable products.
And don't take away my Kraft mac and cheese, because I will rage on you.
And it's especially critical in the baby section, which is usually small in the first place. And if half of the shelf space in the baby section is ridiculously overpriced, affordable options have been cut way, way down. And it's also definitely critical in the produce section, where you have grocery stores like Albertsons and even Winco to an extent seeming to be trying to compete with Whole Foods.
Yeah.
You can't compete with Whole Foods at Whole Foods game. And I don't think they should even try. But trying to get the money of those people is profitable. So if they turn over half of their produce section to all organic, they can make 2 to 5 times as much money off of that. It makes sense that they're going to do it. But it increases the chances of you wanting to buy a zucchini and not being able to find a zucchini that's not $10.
Yeah. And when you're, you know, already the bottom of the barrel, looking at you, Winco, you can't afford to be, people can't afford for you to go up in price. That's why we left Costco.
Right. So
everything went up in price because it all...
They went all organic
went
and
all
natural.
Buzz markety on us. And it's like, hey, this case of beans is it's the same beans.
Uh-huh.
It's just, you know, twice as much. And that's not sustainable.
And when you raise the price at Costco and double it, all of a sudden it's not actually a good value.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great value if you're wanting to buy the premium food. And, you know, I have heard arguments that organic produce tastes better. I would hope it does, because if you're paying that much for it, it better be the most goddamn delicious tomato ever.
No, they're still anemic and weak.
But it's still a tomato.
Yeah.
And I suspect if there's any improvement in the flavor, it's probably because it's fresher, because organic crops have a tendency to not be as shelf stable, so they have to get it to market faster.
Yeah.
And it's... But anyway, so...
Privilege.
Privilege... People exercise, nobody can exercise privilege without hurting somebody else that doesn't have that privilege. So by exercising privilege to buy organic foods, you are inherently taking away choice and options and reducing the privilege of the people who can't afford organic produce. And even just being able to afford buying produce has an inherent amount of privilege to it, because not everybody can buy produce.
Right. Everybody knows that fresh produce and meat is expensive. Carbs are cheaper,
mm-hmm.
which is why people who are lower in the socioeconomic ladder tend to be overweight, because they're buying so many carb foods because they need to fill their bellies,
mm-hmm.
not with nutritious stuff like they should, but with the stuff that they can afford, which is usually high in sodium, high in fat, high in sugar.
It tends to be calorie rich and nutrient poor.
Kraft mac and cheese.
Yeah.
So good, though. So good.
But the same thing also applies to housing. And, you know, Boise keeps on showing up in articles about the housing crisis, but it's happening everywhere, at least in the Western U.S. and major cities around the world. The housing crisis is very real, and it is everywhere. Rents are rising. The availability of houses to buy is getting to be less and less. And if we had all been listening to what minorities have been saying about it with gentrification for years, we would have all seen this coming.
Good.
Because what has happened is, as supply has begun to shrink relative to the demand, people keep getting priced out of their segment of the market.
Right. It's just now starting to affect white people, so now we're getting upset about it.
Uh-huh.
Funny how that works.
Yeah,
huh?
It is. It is sad, and it is, yeah, I am ashamed of that, but, it has reached the point where, yeah, more and more people are getting priced out of the housing market, and it's one of those where I can't really fault, I have a hard time faulting the people that are buying homes to live in, if that's the home they can afford right now. Investors, though, are jumping in and jacking up prices. And they are the pond scum that is clogging up the system. Well, that and Airbnb.
A little bit, yeah. But not as much as investment flippers.
Yeah. People buying out houses to rip them out and put in apartment complexes. And investors that are just buying houses to literally just turn around and sell them in 6 months when prices go up another 10%.
Yeah. Put on a lick of paint.
Oh, no, they're not. I don't think they're even going to do that. Some of these investors are literally just going to hold it for 6 months and sell it.
Yeah.
And if the market keeps going at 10%, yeah, that's a nice return on that investment.
Yeah.
And when every home sale ends in a bidding war, and whoever has the most cash on hand wins,
it's going to be the people who have cash.
Yeah.
Who are not first-time home buyers.
Right.
Or single families, or... It's people who are able to get huge loans from the bank because they have a business they're running and they can promise profits.
Yep.
Lisi.
Yeah. And the tendency with it is every privileged group shits on the group below them.
Like a two-story outhouse.
And that is the part of economics that does trickle down. And if you're at the bottom. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I have a new appreciation and a little better understanding of privilege now. I hope I have explained it in a way that helps even straight white men like me be able to understand it. But
that's all you can do.
And I don't think there's really any solution to, like, awareness of privilege. I don't think can really fix the problem of privilege.
No, because the people who are getting shat on are still getting shat on.
Yeah.
Whether you're higher up the totem pole or not. But it makes you maybe more empathetic to the people below you.
And hopefully at least, well, yeah, that works. If you have privilege, don't be a judgmental asshole. Actually, let's just put it that way. Don't be a judgmental asshole. Try to get as much judgment out of your vocabulary as you can.
Yeah.
Like we've even seen it in comment threads about housing where it's like, oh, you just need to save up money. Okay, if somebody's freaking out about not being able to afford rent, how are they going to be saving money?
Yeah. Saving money is itself a privilege, and one that is getting harder and harder for the average person to do. 30-year-olds nowadays have nothing saved up compared to 30-year-olds 20 years ago.
Right. Because 30-year-olds now are spending the money they would have been saving otherwise on student loan payments.
Yay.
Assuming they actually make enough money
or,
to be able to pay their loans.
Just working minimum wage jobs.
Right.
And supporting families.
All right. Well, I think that about covers it for now. Lauren, thank you.
Thank you, Dustin.
And listeners, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.